Good news or bad news? Both. So it's sometimes said that insight at the beginning is bad news. Often, are any of you feel some tiredness? Restlessness? Monkey mind? How many of you are seeing any reaction to these experiences?
No reaction or a reaction?
A reaction or no reaction. Anyway, I'm curious if anyone has any questions about what you're noticing so far in your practice or anything I've said, any descriptions, comments. We will have a few different times during the day where I check in with you as a group. And as I always say, it's even though you may be a little bit reluctant to speak up in the group, it's highly likely that whatever your question or comment or description is will be of some benefit to someone else. And it's one of the times that I think I can be most useful, so don't be bashful. Anyone has any comments or questions? Or please. Mara the distractor.
Mara in relationship to distraction. But it's a frame or a reference. It's really helpful.
Oh, great. Great. Yes, you know, I one of my gurus in regard to Mara, and this is a person, one of my gurus is Stephen Batchelor, who's a great scholar and controversial, has his views about Dharma, etc. But he wrote a book about Mara, and I love the general spirit of the book is that Mara is just that opposing force in us that's always wants something else. But Mara doesn't want you to do anything wrong. Mara's not the sometimes Mara's been called the evil one, or Mara just wants to keep you distracted. Wants you to keep you involved in the world and in a state of becoming and all the excitement. And Mara doesn't. Mara just doesn't want you to know your royalty. Deep mystery beauty. Just want you to stay small, worried about where you came from and where you're going, and not about where you are. Anyway, but thank you for taking note, and you can say when you see I forgot what you used, distracted mind or something, but just say, thank you, Mara. Because the moment you notice, Mara just kind of slinks away, because Mara is an illusion. Mara is just a fabrication of your mind. It's not real. Even Mara we put to good use. Please. Can't use the back pain. No, I'm just kidding. Well, what I always say is we practice equal opportunity mindfulness, which means anything that can be known in real time is a perfectly equal, reasonable focus of our attention. But there is an art to approaching that particular predominant experience when it becomes easier or stronger than the breath. And the art is I think the most important element of it is that we don't observe the pain in order for it to go away. We don't bargain with it. I'll pay attention to you if you'll change or go away. We pay attention to it because it's dharma. It's the truth of what's happening. And we do it as a way of practicing acceptance of the reality of what's presenting itself, a way of investigating the nature of experience. So it's not only what that pain is, but what's its quality and what happens to it. It may get stronger. It may vanish. It may morph into some other kind of sensation. But it's none of our business to make that happen. It's all of our business to see what happens, to use it as a process of discovery. It's also important that when working with physical pain like that, that you know when you have enough mental strength to be able to accommodate it. So if it's calling your attention and you're getting quite reactive or you're getting weary or your reactions to it are compounding and it's getting stronger than the pain itself, one, you could turn toward the reaction to the pain. That's something to notice also. But when you see that your mind is starting to wither or get, you know, to really crumble, you're not able to pay attention anymore, you're getting tired, then it's actually not wise to pay attention to the pain. It's wise to touch it, know it's there, but then to stay conscious and shift your attention to something you can accommodate more easily. So there's a whole art to it. But of course, because it's dharma, it's perfect. Yeah. And it's a beautiful, you know, if you do have enough mental strength to be with it, it's very riveting and it actually enhances the tranquility and concentration factors. Is there more to it than that? Is there more to your question? Or?
No, that's a satisfying answer.
Well, thank you. Thank you. What about this side of the room, fully enlightened? So maybe if someone would just describe to me what you're noticing, it doesn't have to be a question, just so that I know that you're here. What's the top tune that's playing? Anybody willing to say? Thank you.
That is in response to the gentleman over there and your response to him. I find that my body, when I do feel that discomfort or pain, I try and ignore it and just watch the breath. And I don't feel the pain. So I prefer to do it that way.
You're welcome to do that. As long as you're ignoring the pain, is not... It has a quality of acceptance that it presented itself. If there's a non-acceptance of the pain, you're training your attention to feel averse to pain. And then when there is pain that you can't get away from, then you'll notice that you're more and more reactive to it. So we, as part of our practice, we tend to want to, you don't have to stay with it, like I said, but you want to be gracious in your acknowledgement of it. You want to know that you're meeting it with the acceptance that it's there, and then skillfully and maybe wisely or maybe lovingly, you're saying, I don't have enough mental strength now to be able to sit with you. I'm going to direct my attention to the breath. Of course it's nice not to feel it, but there are those times when we can't get away from it. And so we want to be prepared to know that we can still be well, have a well-being that doesn't depend on the presence or the absence of pain. Because if we like it when it's gone, we don't like it when it's present. And that's not, you can't be happy if you that's not a real reliable happiness. Oh, I'm happy if it's gone, and I'm unhappy if it's here. That's not happiness. That's dependency on the absence of pain for your well-being. And that, unfortunately, that kind of dependency has not made anyone truly happy. It's made us dependent. That's very central to the Buddha's teaching, is if your sense of happiness is dependent on conditions, then you set yourself up for an endless cycle, because things change, an endless cycle of dissatisfaction. I'll elaborate as we go along. But so just a little experiment with when the pain arises or discomfort, just turn toward it just for a few moments. Say, okay, can I have this discomfort and have my mind be open and balanced and actually even happy? Just experiment. Thank you for being brave. Please.
With my pain, I tend to try to direct kindness towards it.
Sometimes that's a very useful thing, to direct kindness toward the pain. Again, it all depends on the motivation. If it's to direct kindness to the pain so it goes away, then there's a subtle kind of aversion or grasping. And so you want to look to see whether the engine of your skillful means, the engine of your method, is actually driven by one of the poisons. You know, the poisons are greed in the mind wanting it to be different, aversion in the mind wanting it to, you know, go away. And if the aim is for anything to be different than the way it is, well, any of the pain itself to be different, then you're actually practicing aversion. On the other hand, if you practice loving kindness in order to, all we're really trying to adjust is the quality of our attention to be able to accommodate what's there. And sometimes that loving kindness, just like I was saying in the instructions, that loving attention is what allows us to accommodate our experience more graciously, and then being able to stay with it and see how it behaves. So tell me, what is your motivation to be kind to it?
I think it is around, I'm trying to make space in my mind for all of what's...
Exactly, yeah, so that's both loving and wise. Great. Keep up the good work. Please.
Can you relate that to emotional pain?
Exactly. All experience.
So sitting with grief.
Yes. So with sitting with grief, and this will all be part of the instruction probably tomorrow morning, but sneak preview. And I said earlier that the instructions are a description of what's happening anyway, so it's not like you have to wait till tomorrow to feel grief. I'm sorry, I don't mean to. But if grief arises, and you know it often arises in association with the memory of someone who you have either recently or are about to lose, or you know that. So there's often, it's interesting to see the correlation between the thought of that person or the image and then the feeling that comes. And meditatively, we want to experience that. And experiencing it is recognizing it as an energetic, not only a mental process, but an energetic process that has a felt experience. It's like a wave. It's like a weather front. It comes and it goes, because we can describe ourselves. Our story is, I'm grieving. But when we experience grief, we recognize that grief is a changing condition. One moment I'm grieving, and it feels like this, and then the next moment, it's as though nothing happened. I'm breathing, or whatever. So we want to learn to accommodate grief as we would a sensation, because it's an inevitable part of life. And as I'll say later again, we're great at thinking about feelings like grief, but we're not so good at feeling them. And so we learn to feel them, and then the very feeling that seems so hard to bear is the very feeling that actually settles us into the living present. It actually calms us down to feel it. And to avoid it actually stirs up our restlessness. And then we end up tightening up and then thinking about our loss instead of actually feeling it. So the great news about grief is it's actually tenderizing, it's soothing, it's peacemaking. And then we can actually see what is grief and what is loss with aversion. You know, because pure grief is just loss with aversion is tension. So we get to see the difference and understand grief, understand the difference between the different feelings that come with loss. Anyway, I can tell you something's near. So if you can right now, just kind of let it roll through your consciousness. It's so human and natural and impermanent. Please. That's one too many questions on emotion.
I was thinking about what happens for me is usually when I'm quiet and sitting and then what seems to happen for me is situations that are causing me a particular amount of turmoil in some way start to arise. And they're usually quite thorny, having to do with resentment, unfairness, wanting to fix something. There's a whole bunch of thought and judgment involved. And I tend to package it somehow and just hold that and let it go.
So you start to notice certain kind of certain themes, certain conflicting themes.
Yeah.
And so you package it in a... You want to figure it out, yes.
And I get past it. Usually I want to get past the resentment and anger. And
yes.
It's just so unsettling.
Yes.
I just want to get past it somehow. And that's when my practice becomes more about, if I can get to bring this peace to this. And then I've got an agenda. The whole thing is just, so when you were, for example,
why did you have to even not know?
I mean, all these kinds of reactive sort of situations that maybe are more personal, where I want to get rid of the resentment, but part of me doesn't because I'm thinking there's some attachment to it because I should act on it. It's very compelling, the whole...
Yes. Usually what makes it compelling and what makes it proliferate is thinking about it and not... feeling it through our body, not anchoring it into an immediate, direct experience. So if you could use every one of those conflicting scenarios and just expand beyond the narrative of it to just make sure that you're not forgetting that it's registering as a felt experience. And in fact, probably what the engine is that's driving all the figuring out is also a felt experience, or fear, or worry, or anger, like you said. And just expand to make sure that you include the felt experience of it. And if you're not extending or feeding the narrative, you will inevitably... you won't be feeding it won't be as compelling, at least for a time, and at least you can use the very feeling of upset to calm you down, not to get past it. So from that place of embodied, aware, present, a little bit, your mind a little bit more harmonized with your body, then you can actually... reflect on a situation and it has a little bit less of a charge. I don't know, that's a general answer, but it could be a longer conversation. But thanks for saying it, because I think all of us get into the same loops. It's usually because we're thinking about things and not feeling them. We're only a vague sense of the feeling of upset. It's not, we don't actually study the feeling, oh, this is what upset feels like. This is what frustration or what restlessness is like. This is what anger is like. You know, so if we really felt it, then it becomes almost like a self-compassion practice where we go, oh my Lord, look at how upsetting this is. And then it's less about the other, more about first things first, attending to our own upset. See, our care for the world can be a kind of self-abandoning. And that's why we have so many burned out activists and political people. So, you know, not enough balance of self-care. We have to have both. Please. Last one. Yeah.
The senses, and then kind of watching how the mind wants to get in there and label.
Yeah.
Experience.
Yeah. Yeah. See, awareness is there with everything. And then one of the things that we can be aware of is the doer, the controller, the one that needs to do something about that, that needs to figure it out. And that's just what we might call sakkaya ditti, that's just ego, self-view. So we get to see that awareness of changing conditions and sense experience, the senses use aware, you know, the awareness uses the senses as its field of experience. That's completely natural and in some ways uncaused. You know, it's not somebody. But then there's the somebody-ness that is also part of our psychological developmental process comes in and starts doing manipulations and trying to get from point A to point B. And so you get to include both of those in mindful awareness. Mindful awareness is not me, somebody being mindful. It's things being noticed. So, I don't know if that answered, spoke to your question, but try to enjoy that little doer. Like, wow, look at the little doer. Try to enjoy that meditator. I'm going to be the best meditator. I'm going to get to nirvana faster than everyone else. Our minds are so funny, but tormenting at the same time. This is a simple example. In some ways, maybe what I'm getting from that, when we're operating out of that doer, then there's conflict. You know, there's tension. I've got to notice this, But when we're noticing the doer, so relating to the doer instead of from the doer, that's just another one of the things that we notice. It's like, oh, aren't we special? Huh. And even having kindness toward that doer, that doer is really out to make you happy, trying to make yourself happy, just trying so hard, not trusting. Just, so, oh, you poor doer. I don't know if I'm making sense, but... Anyway, thanks for your comments, questions. Really the best thing we can do now is just to keep settling in and cooking and trying to enjoy Mara whenever, you know, now when I say walking practice, notice the reaction to doing walking. So just, is there a resistance to doing that? Know what that's like. Oh, resistance is like this. And if you're out walking and you notice that there's, you don't want to keep walking, stop. Notice, oh, don't want to keep doing that. Oh, that's what this is like. And you just keep including everything. So don't just try to plow through. Just try to take an interest in whatever your mind does. And at the same time, you can keep it simple. All we're doing today, or at least in these first hours, is shamatha, putting our mind and body together. Just, and if, and you may have to take on trust if you just keep doing it, then the byproduct will be you'll start to notice that you're here. That you're not there or then, that you're here. And hopefully if you're here long enough, you'll know that that's all there is, that anything else is imaginary. And then you don't want to be somewhere else.